Chapter 93. Baron Kaplan to Mayor, better inform them immediately, to prevent a panic. Mayor, to citizens, I grieve to tell you that the Duke of Brunswick, whom you saw ride out this morning, was killed this afternoon at Les Quatre Bras. A musket ball passed through his bridle hand and entered his belly. His body is now arriving. Carry yourselves gravely.
A lane is formed in the crowd in the direction of the Rue de Namur. They wait. Presently an extemporized funeral procession, with the body of the Duke on a gun carriage, and a small escort of Brunswickers with carbines reversed, comes slowly up the street, their silver death's heads shining in the lamplight. The agitation of the citizen settles into a silent gloom as the mournful train passes.
Mayor, to Baron Kaplan, I noticed the strange look of prepossession on his face at the ball last night, as if he knew what was going to be. Baron Kaplan, the Duchess mentioned it to me. He hated the French, if any man ever did, and so did his father before him. Here comes the English Colonel Hamilton, straight from the field. He will give us trustworthy particulars.
Enter Colonel Hamilton by the Rue de Namur. He converses with the mayor and the baron on the issue of the struggle.
Mayor, now I will go to the Hotel de Ville and get it ready for those wounded who can find no room in private houses.
Exeunt Mayor, Kaplan, Dursel, Hamilton, etc. severally. Many citizens descend in the direction of the Hotel de Ville to assist. Those who remain silently watch the carts bringing in the wounded till a late hour. The doors of houses in the Place and elsewhere are kept open, and the rooms within lighted, in expectation of more arrivals from the field. A courier gallops up, who is accosted by idlers.
Courier, hastily, the Prussians are defeated at Ligny by Napoleon in person. He will be here tomorrow.
Exit courier.
First idler, the devil. Then I am for welcoming him. No Antwerp for me. Other idlers,
Sado Vos,
Vive l'Empereur.
A warm summer fog from the lower town covers the park and the Place Royale.
Seen via the road to Waterloo,
the view is now from Quatre Bras backward along the road by which the English arrived, diminishing in a straight line from the foreground to the center of the distance it passes over Mont Saint John and through Waterloo to Brussels. It is now tinged by a moving mass of English and Allied infantry, in retreat to a new position at Mont Saint John. The sun shines brilliantly upon the foreground as yet, but towards Waterloo and the forest of Soignes on the north horizon it is overcast with black clouds which are steadily advancing up the sky. To mask the retreat, the English outposts retain their position on the battlefield in the face of Ney's troops, and keep up a desultory firing. The cavalry for the same reason remain, being drawn up in lines beside the intersecting Namur Road. Enter Wellington, Uxbridge, who is in charge of the cavalry,
Muffling, Vivian, and others. They look through their field glasses towards Frassin's, Ney's position since his retreat yesternight, and also towards Napoleon's at Ligny. Wellington, the noonday sun, striking so strongly there, makes mirrors of their arms. That they advance their glowing radiance shows. Those gleams by Marbase suggest fixed bayonets. Uxbridge, Vivian's glass reveals that they are cuirassiers. Ney's troops too, near at last, methinks, along this other road. Wellington, one thing is sure, that here the whole French force schemes to unite and sharply follow us. It formulates our fence. The cavalry must linger here no longer, but recede to Mont Saint John, as rearguard of the foot. From the intelligence that Gordon brings, his pretty clear old Blucher had to take a damn good drubbing yesterday at Ligny, and has been bent hard back. So that, for us, bound to the plighted plan, there is no choice but do like. No doubt they'll say at home that we've been well thrashed too. It can't be helped, they must.
He looks round at the sky.
A heavy rainfall threatens us, to make it all the worse.
The speaker and his staff ride off along the Brussels road in the rear of the infantry, and Uxbridge begins the retreat of the cavalry. Captain Mercer enters with a light battery. Mercer excitedly, "Look back, my lord. Is it not Bonaparte himself we see upon the road I have come by?"
Uxbridge, looking through glass,
"Yes, by God. His face as clear cut as the edge of a cloud, the sun behind shows up. His sweet and all. Fire, fire. And aim me well."
The battery makes ready and fires.
"No. It won't do. He brings on mounted ordnance of his guard, so we're in danger here. Then limber up, and off as soon as may be."
The English artillery and cavalry retreat at full speed, just as the weather bursts, with flashes of lightning and drops of rain. They all clatter off along the Brussels road, Uxbridge and his aides galloping beside the column, till no British are left at Quatre Bras except the slain. The focus of the scene follows the retreating English army, the highway and its sand margins panoramically gliding past the vision of the spectator. The phantoms chant monotonously while the retreat goes on.
Chorus of rumors, aerial music, days nether hours advance, storm supervenes in heaviness unparalleled, that screens with water-woven gauzes, vapor bread, the creeping clumps of half-obliterate red severely harassed past each round, and ridged by the inimical lance. They gain the bridge and village of Genop, in equal fence with weather and the enemy's violence. Cannon upon the foul and flooded road, cavalry in the cornfield's mire best road, with frothy horses floundering to their knees, make wayfaring a moil of miseries. Till Britishry and Bonapartists lose their clashing colors for the tawny hues that twilight sets on all its stealing tinctum hues.
The rising ground of Mont St. John, in front of Waterloo, is gained by the English vanguard and main masses of foot, and by degrees they are joined by the cavalry and artillery. The French are but little later in taking up their position amid the cornfields around La Belle Alliance. Fires begin to shine up from the English bivouacs. Camp kettles are slung, and the men pile arms and stand round the blaze to dry themselves. The French opposite lie down like dead men in the dripping green wheat and rye, without supper and without fire. By and by the English army also lies down, the men huddling together on the plowed mud in their wet blankets, while some sleep sitting round the dying fires.
Chorus of the years, aerial music, the eyelids of eve fall together at last, and the forms so foreign to field and tree lie down as though native, and slumber fast. Chorus of the pities, sore are the thrills of misgiving we see in the artless champagne at this harlequinade, distracting a vigil where calm should be. The green seems oppressed, and the plain afraid of a something to come, whereof these are the proofs, neither earthquake, nor storm, nor eclipse's shade. Chorus of the years, yea, the conies are scared by the thud of hoofs, and their white scuts flash at their vanishing heels, and swallows abandon the hamlet roofs. The mole's tunneled chambers are crushed by wheels, the lark's eggs scattered, their owners fled, and the hedgehog's household the sapper unseals. The snail draws in at the terrible tread, but in vain. He is crushed by the fellow rim, the worm asks what can be overhead, and wriggles deep from a scene so grim, and guesses him safe, for he does not know what a foul red flood will be soaking him. Beaten about by the heel and toe are butterflies, sick of the day's long room, to die of a worse than the weather foe. Trodden and bruised to a miry tomb are ears, that have greened, but will never be gold, and flowers in the bud, that will never bloom. Chorus of the pities, so the season's intent, ere its fruit unfold, is frustrate, and mangled, and made succumb, like a youth of promise struck stark and cold. ... And what of these who tonight have come? Chorus of the years, the young sleep sound, but the weather awakes in the veterans, pains from the past that numb, old stabs of Indiana, old peninsular aches, old Friedland chills, haunt their moist mud bed, cramps from Austerlitz, till their slumber breaks. Chorus of sinister spirits, and each soul shivers as sinks his head on the loam he's to lease with the other dead from tomorrow's mistfall till time be sped.
The fires of the English go out, and silence prevails, save for the soft hiss of the rain that falls impartially on both the sleeping armies.
Act 7th, scene at the Field of Waterloo, an aerial view of the battlefield at the time of sunrise is disclosed. The sky is still overcast, and rain still falls. A green expanse, almost unbroken, of rye, wheat, and clover, in oblong and irregular patches undivided by fences, covers the undulating ground, which sinks into a shallow valley between the French and English positions. The road from Brussels to Charleroi runs like a spit through both positions, passing at the back of the English into the leafy forest of Soignes. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.